People fear all sorts of things, don't they? That will be things that they are scared about, things that cause them to panic, to be anxious, things that we would want to flee away from and avoid at all cost. For example, there's a fear of failure, or change, or rejection, or humiliation. Some people are petrified of social situations in which they may be watched or judged, or of having to do public speaking. Perhaps that's you. Or perhaps you're scared of the dentist, or a nice big injection, or blood. Some people pass out when they see blood. Or what about one of those typical phobias that people have? Acrophobia, aerophobia, arachnophobia, claustrophobia, etc. That's a fear of heights, of flying, of spiders, of small spaces. People can develop an intense or even irrational fear for things like these. But all these fears and phobias are mere child's play compared with the mother of all fears, which is the fear of death itself. Granted, there's a kind of fear for death that's healthy. It's an instinct that protects us against danger, doesn't it? It helps us to live carefully and sensibly, and not to be reckless with life or to take it for granted. After all, we only have one life. It is very precious and it's fragile. So let's live wisely, as we see in Psalm 90. But then there's that fear of death that's utterly overpowering and enslaving. It's called thanatophobia, from the word thanatos and phobos. You might not experience it now, but when death comes knocking on your door to claim you or one of your loved ones, and you feel there's no escape from this fearsome foe, thanatophobia can be very real. In our text today, in Luke chapter 8, verse 40 to 56, we encounter a father, a dad, who gets gripped with thanatophobia when, despite his best efforts to save his beloved daughter's life, she died. Now, the shock and the confusion, the grief and the pain of a parent who has lost their beloved child can be one of the most severe and long-lasting of emotions that a human can experience. Some of us know godly parents who have tragically lost a child. You may be such a parent. The scars that you have bear testimony to your acute pain. Death is a dreaded foe. And the fear of death can be an extreme force. Who can stand against it? Who can defeat it? There's only one man who has ever conquered death. The Bible records multiple people who were resurrected by him and in his name. And he himself rose from the dead, never to die again. Who is he? Children, you know who he is. He is Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of the Most High God. He has the power over death, since he has power and authority over everything. We saw his power over nature when he calmed a freak storm. And then we saw his power over the spirit world when he delivered a man from extreme demon possession. Today we'll see once again his power over disease and death. Why is it so important to realize Jesus' absolute power and authority over every circumstance, force, principle, element, being? Why do we need to be clear on this and never doubt this? Because only Jesus is worthy of our trust. Only He can enable us to face our worst fears with a sense of peace and assurance. As mentioned, our text today puts Jesus' power and authority over death and disease on display. And we see it in two interwoven accounts of Jesus' compassion and power. The two accounts contain two miracles, a supernatural healing and a supernatural resurrection, which, by the way, is the only kind of resurrection that there is. We can say we have a miracle inside of a miracle. So let's have a look at what happened. After Jesus and his disciples' eventful, almost fatal journey across the Sea of Galilee and his dramatic deliverance of the demon-possessed man in Gentile land of the Gerasenes, they returned to the shores of Galilee. And what was awaiting them there? A huge crowd. Someone might have spotted the sailboat in a distance and then signaled the Messiah's imminent arrival. By the time Jesus' boat docked, he was once again swamped by multitudes of people. They welcomed him back with great eagerness. Perhaps no one was as eager and anxious for Jesus' return as a man named Jairus. Who was Jairus? We're told in Luke 8 verse 41, he was a ruler of the synagogue, presumably in Capernaum. This made him a leading figure and one of high social standing and well-known in that city and possibly the entire region. And being in charge of worship services there, he was obviously a very devout man and a religious man. It's quite possible that he was among the elders who pleaded with Jesus to go and heal the centurion slave in Luke chapter 7. This time, however, he desperately pleaded to Jesus for the life of his own flesh and blood, his one and only darling daughter. Have a look at Luke chapter 8, verse 41b and 42a. And falling at Jesus' feet, he, Jairus, implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. By any standards, this is a heart-wrenching situation. A young girl who has barely come of age was in the process of dying. In medical terms, we say she was terminally ill. Whatever her condition was, it was incurable. There was nothing, humanly speaking, that anyone could do for her anymore. It was that time that was left to just try and comfort her and hope and wish that she wouldn't have a prolonged, painful death, but that it will be peaceful. But not to this dad. He wasn't giving up yet. Respectable or not, he threw himself at Jesus' feet and begged him with every fiber in his being, "My daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be well and live." That's what we see in Mark's account, he said. Does it move you? Well, it moved Jesus. We see that at the end of Luke chapter 8, verse 42. And so Jesus went with Jairus. There was hope, but it was a race against time. However, just as they got going, everything came to a sudden halt. Like an ambulance hitting a traffic jam, Jesus and his company got delayed in getting to the casualty. What caused the delay? Someone touched Jesus. Really. But many people pressed and pushed against him as he moved through the crowds. It was like fish in a sardine can. One could barely move without making contact with the people around you. And as we've seen before, many people always tried to touch Jesus because of who he was and because of his power. People got healed that way. So, Jesus was being touched by people all the time, and he allowed it. So what was the problem? A certain lady touched Jesus in a special way. It's not what you may think. There was nothing sexual or inappropriate about it. Far from it. It was because it was so appropriate and so remarkable that it stopped Jesus in his tracks. Who was the lady? Why did she touch Jesus? Luke chapter 8 verse 43 tells us that she had a flow of blood for 12 years. She probably had what is medically called abnormal uterine bleeding, which is associated often with anemia, infertility, and endometrial cancer. Even today, with all the medical advances, this condition can be fatal. But back in those days, no one could heal her. She spent all she had on doctors, and guess what? She got worse and worse. This was an incredibly cruel condition to suffer from. Apart from feeling unwell most of the time because of the frequent and excessive blood loss, it was hugely inconvenient and embarrassing trying to manage the discharge of blood on your clothes everywhere. And according to the law in Leviticus, a woman with a discharge of blood was unclean for 7 days. Whoever touched her was unclean until evening. This probably meant that she was permanently unclean. That would have excluded her from any fellowship or temple worship. You've got to feel for her. A very sick and afflicted woman who lost everything, had no prospect of healing, and no prospect of a normal communal life. This was a heavy cross to bear. What was she to do? Touch Jesus. Look at Luke chapter 8 verse 44. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. And immediately the discharge of blood ceased. Mark tells us that she heard reports about Jesus and said to herself, If I touch his garments, I will be made well. And that's exactly what she did. And that is exactly what happened to her. Amazing, don't you think? She sneaked up on Jesus and simply touched the edge of his cloak from behind. And then she disappeared in the crowd again. It was totally inconspicuous. No one saw a thing. Not even the disciples, who would have watched Jesus with eagle eyes, didn't detect any suspicious behavior. Anyway, as soon as she touched Jesus, ever so slightly and briefly, she was healed instantly, completely. What all the doctors and all her resources couldn't achieve in 12 years of trying, Jesus did in a split second. In the blink of an eye, he stopped her flow of blood, removed all her pain and shame, and restored her to perfect health. No dramatic act was performed. Not even a word was spoken. There was only a disguised and a delicate touch. And Jesus performed a miraculous healing without anyone noticing, except the woman and Jesus, of course. This is why Jesus stopped. The woman touched him in such a way that he could distinguish her touch from all the other physical contact in the entire crowd. And because she touched him in that way, he released his wonderful working power to her. And then Jesus said in verse 45, "Who touched me?" When the disciples couldn't answer, Jesus pressed the point even further. "Someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out of me." One could almost feel the tension in the crowd as Jesus waited for an answer, with his eyes scanning the crowd like lasers into people's souls. This must have felt like an eternity for the lady, as the pressure mounted for her to come forward. Spare a thought for poor Jairus, who by now probably have chewed up all his nails, pulled out all his hair, and thinking, "We really don't have time for this right now. No disrespect, but we have an emergency. My daughter is dying, and she will breathe her last breath any moment if she isn't dead already." But Jesus had unfinished business with a woman, which had to be dealt with there and then. This was for more than just her sake. Believe it or not, it was for Jairus' sake as well. He just didn't realize it. Anyway, the pressure was just what the lady needed. When she realized that Jesus knew, she came in fear and trembling and fell face down at his feet. Before everyone, she made a full confession of why she touched Jesus and how she was healed at once. You see, as urgent as Jesus' appointment with Jairus' daughter was, he had time to stop and establish this dear lady in her faith. She believed in her heart. Now she got to confess with her mouth that Jesus is Lord. Then Jesus blessed her. He said to her in Luke chapter 8, verse 48, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." As Jesus honored the woman in Simon the Pharisee's house in Luke chapter 7, so now he honors this lady for her faith. He confirmed that she was permanently healed because she took hold of him, not so much with her hand, but with her faith. Therefore, Jesus owned her as God's daughter, and he pronounced his wholeness and peace upon her. And get this, he publicly restored her to communal life. Is that not amazing what Jesus does? Let's move on. The traffic jam was cleared. But just as Jesus and them got going again, the sad news broke that Jairus' daughter had died. With all that, all the hopes of her life to be saved was lost. You get the sense of hopelessness in the words of the messenger to Jairus there in verse 49. "Don't trouble the teacher anymore." It's like saying there's no longer any point in getting Jesus to come. It's too late. It might have been too late from a human perspective, but with Jesus, it wasn't too late. He is never late. He is always on time. And so he said to Jairus in verse 50, "Do not fear, only believe, and she will be well." This is amazing. Jairus had just witnessed the faith of a woman with a life-threatening illness and Jesus healing her as a result of her faith. And now Jesus tells him to have faith in the face of death. "Don't be afraid, Jairus. by death. Trust me with your dead child, says Jesus. Why should Jairus trust Jesus? Well, didn't Jesus just heal the sick? Can he not raise the dead? He did it for the widow of Nain's son, remember? And the report of that spread through the whole region and beyond. Surely this news reached Capernaum as well. And Jairus, being such a high profile and connected man, would have known about this. And what is more, Jesus gave Jairus the promise that he would raise his child as well, if only he trusted. So Jairus had very good reason to believe that Jesus was going to raise his dead child. Thankfully, though, we can sense something of Jairus' faith. It was his faith in the first place that drove him to ask Jesus to come. And now it was his faith to allow Jesus and the whole crew to proceed to his home. Well, they arrived at Jairus' home, and it was clear that his daughter had indeed died. Matthew tells us that flute players and a funeral crowd had gathered there already, and the people were restless. Luke adds that there was loud weeping and wailing, which was very typical in those days when people had died. And of course, being a tragic death of a child, the whole affair was so much sadder. At this point, Jesus did two things. He chose only a handful of people to accompany him to the room where the deceased girl had been laid. These would become the witnesses of what Jesus was about to do. The witnesses being the mother, the father, and the inner circle of Jesus, Peter, James, and John. And then Jesus did an astonishing thing. In verse 52, he went up to the mourners and he said to them, "Do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping." That was Jesus' way to end the funeral right there and then. But the mourners laughed him off, because the girl was really dead and not sleeping. By talking about the girl as sleeping, Jesus was pointing to the fact that her death was only temporary. And he was about to resurrect her. Did you know in the New Testament, this is the way he talks about believers who had died? They have fallen asleep. That means the time is coming that Jesus will raise them all in their bodies. Anyway, after Jesus had cleared the house and went to the girl with his five witnesses, he made good his promise to Jairus to resurrect his daughter. And this is how he did it. In Luke chapter 8, verse 54 and 55, have a look with me. By taking her by the hand, he called, saying, "Child, arise!" And her spirit returned, and she got up at once, and he directed that something should be given her to eat. Once again in Luke, Jesus shows his compassion and his cleansing power by touching what is considered to be unclean. In this case, he reached out and he took the girl's hand as if he was going to help her up to stand. And then Jesus spoke to her as he spoke to the son of the widow who had died when he rose him from the dead. And Mark records Jesus' words more precisely. He said, "Talita kum," which is Arabic for "Little girl, rise up." At once, her spirit returned and she got up. This is what happens when people die. Their spirits depart from their bodies. And now Jesus was reversing this by summoning her spirit back into her body, and she became alive again. As proof that she was really alive and that no one was hallucinating, Mark mentions the fact that she started to walk Luke records that something was given to her to eat. There was no mistake about it. And the people were amazed, and understandably so. Imagine the relief and the joy for Jairus and his wife. They would have burst with excitement, just wanting to declare from the top of their lungs what Jesus had just done for their daughter. But he gave them strict instructions to tell no one. This is an odd instruction, don't you think? With the little girl running around again, this resurrection miracle wasn't going to be a secret for very long, was it? Perhaps Jesus wanted Jairus and his wife to think more deeply about the spiritual realities of what had just transpired. Let's summarize what had transpired. Jesus had just performed a double miracle before Jairus' very eyes. Firstly, he healed a woman who was tormented of a cruel and incurable disease that robbed her of the prime of her life. And Jesus did it as effortlessly as you and I take a breath. Secondly, Jesus raised Jairus' daughter from the dead as easily as you would wake someone from sleep. Actually, when you think of teenagers and how they sleep, which is sort of like a mini resurrection to get them up, it was even easier for Jesus to raise this girl from the dead. But what does this tell Jairus and us? Jesus is just a miracle worker who does and teaches good things. Seriously, is that all? Not even close. Let's try again. It tells us that Jesus is indeed the Messiah, the Son of the Most High God, who has absolute authority and power over death and disease, and who keeps his word. And that is why he is worthy of our total trust, allegiance, and love. This brings us back to Jesus' instruction to Jairus. Do not fear, only believe. Jairus' worst fear that his one and only beloved daughter would die happened. But when Jesus raised her back to life, as he said he would, Jairus' faith flourished. Importantly, Jesus wanted Jairus to believe in him. He wanted him to trust him. And so Jesus trained Jairus to do exactly that. When Jairus came up to him the first time and he cried to him in his hour of crisis to come and save his daughter, Jesus responded positively to his faith. But then there was a delay when Jesus stopped to minister to the woman. And Jairus' crisis deepened. But it wasn't a crisis for Jesus. He was in perfect control. Everything was going according to plan. Jairus had to learn that God does his work, his way, in his time. While Jesus is attending to people's crises, he is never busy or too busy to help and bless others who aren't in a crisis. Come to think about it, while Jesus took his time to heal the woman and draw out her testimony, Jesus was showing Jairus that the faith he wants and blesses is a faith that would take hold of Jesus and take courage to speak about him. Finally, Jesus proved to Jairus that he can and should be trusted, even in the face of our greatest fears, which is death itself. May I ask you, is this the faith you have in Jesus? A faith that goes to Him and calls upon Him in your time of need. A faith that will accept God's way and God's timing. A faith that holds on to Jesus and testifies about Him. And a faith that overcomes fear, even our fear of death. Is that your faith? Yes? Good. Now, if you are a parent, here's a test for you. Do you trust the Lord with your child? Your child might not be physically dead, but might be spiritually dead. What's going to make them alive? Discipline? Punishment? Human power and effort? No. Only Jesus can make people spiritually alive. And that includes our children. So we really have a choice. Either to actively trust Jesus with our child or not to bother at all. But not to bother is not an option. It's your child. Seek Jesus out. Throw yourself at His feet. Follow Him around. And put up with His way and His timing, just like Jairus had to do. But never, ever fear. Only believe. Will your child then not be made well? In closing, there is only one way to overcome the fear of death. And it's this, by trusting in the one who overcame death. Listen to Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14 and 15. Because God's children are human beings, made of flesh and blood, the Son also became flesh and blood. For only as a human being could He die. And only by dying could He break the power of the devil who had the power of death. And only in this way could He set free all who have lived their lives as slaves to fear of dying. Jesus sets us free from the terror and the enslaving power of death when we trust in Him who conquered death for us through His death and resurrection. Let us trust Him. Let us never fear. Amen.